When Joe Gibbs was a young lad, he moved with his family from North Carolina to California. Little did he know that his days of moving had only just begun. After college, Joe went into a lifelong coaching career, beginning at San Diego State University. In the ensuing years, he crisscrossed the country until becoming head coach of the Washington Redskins. For 12 years, he was their head coach, compiling one of the most impressive records in the history of the game. Joe led his team to the Super Bowl 4 times. 3 times they were world champions. But the life of this NFL coach has not just been filled with Super Bowls. On this cassette, Joe Gibbs frankly shares his life in pro football. More important, you will hear how his faith in God has made him able to cope with both the stress and success of a coaching career. So let's bring in the coach. Here's Joe Gibbs.
Thank you. You guys are going to scare me a little bit because you're supposed to get the standing ovation at the end, not at the beginning. It was a little less than enthusiastic when you said we're all Redskin fans. I sense there's a few other people out here that are pulling for some other NFL teams. But tonight, you're going to all have to pull and root, like we say, for the Redskins, although I realize some of those competitive people out there have made my football life what it's all about. How did I get this opportunity? Sometimes you ever stop and say, how in the world did I get someplace? I mean, you're talking about a guy that went to school, got a bunch of C's, sat on the front row, and pointed my Letterman jacket and said, I need a C. I need to be eligible. Well, I mentioned starting off in school, and many people ask, Joe, how'd you get to be the head coach of the Washington Redskins? And, you know, it's not like you get a PhD in coaching or something, and I have to tell them, I don't know. I wound up at San Diego State, and I got to be about a junior or senior out there, and I said, well, what do I like to do? I kid my mother all the time. I said, well, I was trying to make up my mind. Do I want to be a neurosurgeon, a physicist, or a football coach? And I said, what the heck, I'll be a football coach. But I got on that staff there at San Diego State coaching. And when I got through, it wasn't good enough to play pro sports. And I tell you, a little trivia question for all the sports fans here. That original coaching staff at San Diego State had a guy on it by the name of Don Coryell, who went on to coach in pro ball at two different places, did a fantastic job. Some people may rate him maybe the best ever. And another guy by the name of John Madden. That's who I worked under. I went in and volunteered for that job, and I said, hey, I'll work for nothing. That's how I got started coaching. And my job, really, the most important job I had was at night, was to go over to the local Jack in the Box and get the tacos and the hamburgers and bring them back. And the only time I really got in trouble is if I left something off John Madden's taco, I was in trouble. I wind up moving on and coaching a bunch of places and, of all things, get an opportunity to go to the Washington Redskins to coach their football team there as a head coach. And can you believe it? I go, the dream that I'm getting to live to go there and coach, and do you realize I started out 0-5. Now, 0-5 in Washington is a big deal. I was just looking for different ways home at night. I didn't want anybody to know where I was. I told Pat, please get rid of the dog because there's no telling what's going to happen. But of all things, we got that thing turned around, got to go to some Super Bowls, and I tell you, it was one of the greatest experiences anyone could ever have. Then I make up my mind here about a year ago. I said, you know, several things had happened in my life, and I made up my mind I was going to step down, try and get a little closer to my family, enjoy some of those things. And everybody said, no, Mr. Cook told me, use the words retire. And I stopped and I said, I'm not old enough to retire. And let me illustrate that. I was walking down the hall. We were getting ready to play out in Seattle. And I was walking down this hall, this big hotel, and I heard this music coming out of the ballroom. And I said, man, that's my year. That's the 50s. That's some 50s music. And I went down there and I asked them, I said, what's going on? They said, it's a reunion. I said, what year? And they said, 1959. I said, that's my year. I was all excited, and I go charge down there, and I threw open the doors of this place, and I looked in there, and I went, good gosh, these people are old. So I don't feel old enough to retire, but I did wind up retiring, and of all things, I had a dream about getting in auto racing, and, you know, I had one big challenge there. And that was to talk my wife, who could care less about auto racing, into coming in and spending some of her money on race cars. And my wife is very tight. I asked somebody in the racing world, I said, what's the best race to bring my wife to? I said, you know, I can't bring her one of those long things, get her out in the heat. I mean, we'll be dead. And they said, okay, I'll tell you what, bring her to Charlotte. We got a beautiful racetrack there, and they got these $250,000 suites. We'll put her up in one of the suites. I get somebody to put her up there. We'll get a lot of food, people to talk to. There's going to be three races in this particular race. She won't get bored. I said, man, that's great. What a great game plan. Sure enough, turned out perfect. The day was just right. The people, the box, everything is great. I got Pat up there trying to persuade her and all this stuff. And we got down, and this first race starts. 20 laps into the first race, I looked over, and Pat was like this. She is totally asleep. I know I'm in trouble. I said, good gosh, what am I going to do here? I kept talking, and I got my two sons to talk, and we eventually persuade my wife to make an investment in a race car team. Now, our first race, I got to tell you, in NASCAR, they start off with the Super Bowl. And our first race was the Daytona 500 2 years ago. And our car started 31st in this race because we'd gotten a wreck qualifying. And so we're way at the back. Well, they said, Pat's up in this box now. She's got money in this car. And they said every time that car came by, she was just like this. She's on her toes and she's watching her money go by. And we started 31st. We go right to the front. If any of you were watching that race that day, we went right to the front. We're seventh after 200 miles. And they said, Pat's up there, and she's going, this is a piece of cake. We're going to win our very first race. This is not even a big deal. For the race fans also, you'll know in that particular race, at about 350 miles, three cars decide to go abreast on the back straightaway, and there's a 14-car wreck. And guess whose car is right in the middle of it? Our car gets tore all to pieces. It's the only one that we've ever lost. And now I am in the back. I'm all dejected and everything with everybody back there, the driver and everything. And so now I said, well, I better go find Pat. I went to the box. She wasn't in the box. They went, said she left, man. She went to the mobile home. I went, oh, no. I beat it down to the mobile home. I go inside. There's Pat laying on the bed in the mobile home. She looks up at me, and the first thing she said was, I don't think I like this. And the second thing she said, how much did that cost? I told her, no problem, it's in the budget. But we've somehow managed to survive 2 years of racing. We love that. My one son's working there, and we're having a ball with that. Pat doesn't quite understand that, though, either. JD, my one son that's working in racing, he always wanted to get in racing, and 5 years of college, and he's changing left side tires on race day. Pat goes, 5 years of college and he's changing tires? What's the deal here? But we're kind of getting along good. We didn't do too well today. Finished 15th over there today, but it's been a real excitement. I've enjoyed that a lot. The other thing I'm doing, I get to do a little bit TV analysis. You've heard all those guys? You know, Dan Dierdorf and all those guys are so smart. I coach Dan Dierdorf, okay? Some of those guys. And now those guys are the biggest critics of the coaches on the sideline. But I'll tell you this, I've moved about 200 yards up in the box up there, and I tell you, I'm getting a lot smarter. I second-guess those guys like mad. But we're having fun doing that, and I'm enjoying the TV part of it and some races and things like that, and I've had a real ball. I'll tell you, the last 3 years, though, have been kind of a trying time for me, and I'll share this with you. About 3 years ago, I lost my father, who was somebody I really, really loved. It was a cop and a tough guy and somebody that was really close to me. And I had a chance to stand at the foot of his bed and see him kind of be sorry for some of the things that he had passed by in life. And about 2.5 years ago, I lost my spiritual father, who was a little Sunday school teacher that came real close to me at University of Arkansas when I was there. We were probably at opposite ends of the world. He, I don't think, had ever played a sport of any kind in his life. He was a businessman, but yet that guy just took me to heart. And man, he just prayed over me and kind of brought me back to where I should be. And I had a chance to talk to George and realize in his last days there some of the things that he had looked at and some of the things that he felt like, you know, he wished he could have done a better job. And then I lost, about the same time, I lost a real good friend of mine named Glenn Brenner, who maybe some of you know was a sportscaster there in Washington area. Here's a guy that was totally different than the other two. My dad was 72 and George was in his 70s. Here was a guy that was 44 years old, had just run a marathon, and within 2 weeks after that marathon had an inoperable brain tumor and passed away, and I had a chance to stand at the foot of his bed. And you know what that caused me to do? All three of those guys. I started doing a little analysis myself. Because, you know, I could kind of see in those guys, and, you know, I mentioned I'm 52 years old. My dad passed away at 72, so how much longer do I have? How am I investing my life? What are some of the things that I might be sorry for when it comes to that time where I realize, you know, that that I don't have much longer on this earth myself. And so it's caused me to really think. And it's been a good time, but a sad time for me. But it's caused me to really evaluate my life. And I got to tell you guys, I've wasted some of the years of my life. And I think the question becomes, you know, what am I going to do with the rest of the years I have? Let me back up and tell you a little bit about my life. Grew up in the hills of North Carolina. My grandmother and mother, man, had me in church, little church there. And I was one of the kids that played there, you know, threw the stuff out of the stairs on you guys and stuff like that. But my grandmother and mother made sure I was in that church. And I can remember some of the first big decisions I ever had to make in life, because in school, I was being taught that two amoeba happened to hit in a muddy puddle of water a couple of million years ago, and we evolved into man and woman. Or I was being taught in my church by my pastor and my grandmother and at Bible school and what have you that, no, that wasn't the case at all. That God looked down and loved me, made me special, and put me on this earth with special abilities. You know, those are the two things I was kind of weighing. I started searching for some truth in that, because, you know, you like to have proof and truth, and those are the things that I was really searching for. And, I started looking around at the world. If you want proof, look at this world. The way this thing is put together, isn't it marvelous? We got trees, we got buildings like this, we got men and women with the ability to love each other. And, you know, could that be an accident? Think about it. Sometimes I use my watch as an example. You know, people want proof. Well, I'll tell you something. I'm not real smart, but I know this is a complicated piece of machinery here. And I know that where there's a watch, there's a watchmaker. I can figure that out. And I'll tell you what, you look at this world and the way this thing is put together, I'll tell you what, I looked at that and I said, hey, listen, I'm not real sharp, but I know this. Where there's a world, there's a world maker. And I tell you what, I think that is real proof, if you want to ask me. Now, the second bit of proof, I tell you what, my pastor there and my mother and grandmother were really harping and reading to me about this book right here. And I tell you what, I think this book is the second bit of proof to all of us that God exists. Now, you think about this thing. It was written by 35 authors over a period of 1,500 years. And so far, everything from the beginning to the end has been perfect. You stop and think about it. You know how hard that is? I'll tell you how hard it is. I went to Tampa Bay Buccaneers in about 1974 to be the offensive coordinator down there. Now, in football language now, offensive coordinators are the guys that make the calls on the sidelines. You know, and I went down there and I was so excited because, man, I wanted to be a head coach and I knew my next step up was going to be being a head coach as soon as I went down there and put the Tampa Bay Bucks in the Super Bowl. So I'd made up my mind that's what I was going to do. And I went down there, and the first thing that the head coach down there, John McKay, asked me to do, he says, Joe, why don't you go out and work out the quarterbacks? I said, okay. I went out and did that, and I came back in. He says, what do you think? And I said, I don't think we have one. And he goes, I agree with you. I don't think we do either, so let's go try and find one. We went out and worked out some quarterbacks this year, and we came across a guy by the name of Doug Williams. How many remember Doug Williams? Man, we drafted that guy in the first round. I was all set, and I'm on the sidelines, and I'm calling plays. And you've seen the way the guy signals on the sideline. Well, we kind of developed that, and that's the way I was calling plays to Doug. It was a short, quick way to get things into the quarterback. And, man, we took off, and we won a game or two, and then we lost a couple of games. And Coach McKay came to him, and he said, Joe, he said, listen, I'm not real comfortable with you using those signals. I want to know what your plays you're calling, so I want you to tell a player on the sideline who'll go in and tell Doug Williams, who'll tell the team. Now, have you ever tried calling a play? And this is one of our plays right here. Trips right, zoom, Liz, 989, F cross sneak. Now, you want to try and call that to a receiver that's been hit in the head about three times that's going to go in and tell Doug Williams. You know what I mean? They look at you like, and they go in, and Doug looks back and goes, what was that? And we call the play. And I'm here to tell you that we went about another two games, and we lost another couple. And Coach McKay came to me, and he said, listen, Joe, I figured this out. He said, I don't think you're real comfortable on the sideline, so I want you to go up in the press box where you're used to calling those plays, and you've been other places. You call the play down to an assistant coach on the sideline who will tell a player on the sideline who will go in and tell Doug Williams who will tell the team. Do you realize a lot of people call plays that way? What's wrong with that? It's just like in the party where you pass the sentence around the room, and when you get to the other side, what? Hey, It's never the sentence. That's too complicated. That's too hard to do. Stop and think about it. 35 men over a period of 1,500 years. Now, how hard's that? What's that tell you? This book is a miracle. This book was put here by God. This book is our game plan. Hey, when you go to play a game, man, I tell you, you got to have a game plan. We go to play a game, we know what we're going to try and do. We got about 7 running plays. We got about 12 passing plays on first down, and we know what we're going after. Hey, this book's our game plan. If you want to study the way to succeed in life, God left this for us, and this book is a miracle. Now, I put those two things together, along with my grandmother's love for me, and I started thinking about some other things. And I tell you what, I came down to an analysis. And you know, when it starts telling us what happened in this book, which I started picking up in my Bible school and from my grandmother and mother, the story about God's love for you and me. Man, he put Adam and Eve here, and he loved them so much, he gave them freedom of choice. And he put them in a Garden of Eden, and he said, this thing's going to be perfect. All you have to do is just stay with me. But they didn't want to do that. He gave them freedom of choice. He could have made them as robots now, but he loved them too much for that. Many times I want to take my kids and lock them away in a room because I don't want them to get out and make mistakes. But see, if you love them enough, you got to let them go. You got to give them freedom of choice. God did that to Adam and Eve. They sinned. And at that point, when they sinned, everything that's evil entered the world. God, in his infinite wisdom, then said, hey, listen, there's only one way to get man back. That's to send my son, Jesus Christ, to die for us, lived a perfect life, was crucified, arose, went back to heaven, and sits at the right hand of God, and he's our way back to God. Isn't that a fantastic story? When you realize, I tell you, God's word tells us that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever should believe on him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Do you realize how great that is? Hey, I love my two. I know you love your children. Can you imagine what it would be to give one of those up? And God did that for us. I tell you, that gift, and when I put those things together in my life, I was 9 years old. I said, hey, I'm not a mistake. The world is proof that God exists. This Bible is proof. The love of my mother, my grandmother. And then when I found out how much God loved me, man, I tell you, 9 years old, I got up, took off forward in church, and here's what I said. I said, God, I know you're there. I know you made me. I know you love me, and I want to give you my life. I tell you, that's one of the greatest decisions I've ever made. Now, I took off in life, though. And, you know, I started in high school, and then I went on into college, and I came out of college, and man, I tell you, I'm probably like a lot of you guys, I wanted to be happy and successful. And so I took off on this journey, and man, I tell you, all of a sudden, I started seeing that there was a game plan out there. It was a world's game plan. And the world's game plan is sold to us where? In the papers, it's in the magazines, and it's in the movies, and it's on TV. And I started seeing there was a game plan out there. Man, it said, listen, if you want to be happy and successful, here's what you have to do. And the first thing is you got to make money, gain position if you can, hopefully become a position of power in some ways, and in my case, win football games. If you do enough of that, you're going to be happy and successful. The second thing that the world kind of tells us is that it loves us. The world says, man, I love you. Now, if there's anybody who can talk to you about that, it's a football coach. Because I've heard you guys on 4th and 1. What do y'all say? Go for it, go for it. When I was a young coach, I went, man, they want to go for it. And the first time I went for it and didn't make it, y'all went, boo. But a football coach can tell you now, does the world love you or not? The third thing there is that the world tells us, hey, you have one life to live and then you're going to die. And if that's the case, then you need to do your own thing. Because, hey, it doesn't matter what you do to other people or anything else. Hey, you got one life, you die, boom, it's gone, that's over with. And the last thing there, again, like I said, the world says, man, if you can accomplish enough of these things, you're going to be happy and successful in life. And I wanted that. Probably, maybe like some of you out there. And so I took this game plan, man, I took off. Hey, I come out of college and I am roaring. I'm trying to do all these things. And I kind of put God on the back shelf. And I started living by this game plan. In 1972 now, and I wasted a lot of years. In 1972, God put me back together with that little Sunday school teacher and with some other people in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And you know what happened? By looking at their life, I started seeing that there was another game plan. You know whose game plan that was? It was God's game plan. It was a different game plan than the world's game plan. Okay, now what did it say? Okay, the world says you got to make money, gain position, and win football games. And God says, hey, that's not it at all. Said, if you have the right perspective on all those things, if you have God's perspective on all those things, which you can get from God, He will give you that. That is the most important thing. It's not making the money, but it's having the right perspective on money. It's not your career and all the things you can achieve and all the things that you can store up from a financial standpoint. It's having the right perspective on those things. The second point that about the fact that the world loves you, I like to illustrate by telling you a little story. 1983, we probably had one of the best football teams I think that's ever played in the NFL. We were 14-2 with 2 1-point losses. Man, we had John Riggs at fullback. We had Joe Theismann at quarterback. We had a defense that was rock solid. And I'm telling you, we were pretty good. We were going to the Super Bowl in 1983, and we're going to play the Raiders in Tampa. Here I was, a PE major from San Diego State, who was coaching a football team that had gone to a couple of Super Bowls. I'm going to tell you, you know what? Everybody in Washington started saying I was pretty smart. Can you believe that? And the worst part of that is I started to believe them. So we go down to Tampa, and we line up, and I was just sure we were going to beat the Raiders that day. And we took off in that game, and it was one of the, I mean, that first half was awful. We got a punt blocked, everything in the world. I see my Redskin guy here going, yeah, I saw that. It was awful. We took off. We started playing that game, and everything in the world went wrong. We fumbled the ball. We got a punt block and everything. And so it comes down to 12 seconds to go in the first half, and I was confronted with the decision. They had just punted us, and the ball was all the way back on our 20-yard line, and the football bus here will tell you you can't throw a pass to the end zone 80 yards. And so I was confronted. Do I fall on this football, or do I try and go for something? Now, I know how you guys all are. If I could have stopped the TV sets wherever you were, you would have said to me, because I've heard you in the stands, you would have said to me, are you crazy? Try it. Go for something. Take a chance. And so I'm on the sideline. It's a little different for me. I'd like to have all of you down there with me sometimes. I got Joe Theismann yakking in this ear. I got guys yelling and screaming on this ear. So I said, shut up. Here's what we're going to do. Okay? We're going to take a shot. We had 2 timeouts left. We're going to try and throw a little screen pass here. Try and pick up about 20 or 30 yards. Get to midfield. Call timeout, hopefully with a few seconds left, and throw a Hail Mary at the end zone. At least we got a chance. Makes sense, doesn't it? And so I told Joe Theismann, that's what you're going to do. And Joe takes off in the ball game, and he goes in there, and he drops back. Now, when you're that far away from the goal line, I was here to tell you, nobody plays man-to-man defense, right? Everybody drops straight back. Well, one linebacker went man-to-man to Joe Washington, who we were going to throw the screen pass to. And Joe Theismann goes back and throws the prettiest screen pass in the world to the Raider linebacker who scored with it. Now, remember I was telling you I was a pretty smart guy in Washington? The next day in the Washington Post, I was called a buffoon. Now, that's a true story. What are you guys laughing about? It kind of hurt. You know what I mean? I say this to illustrate to you, if there's anything a football coach can tell you, the only way you can please the world is if you win every time. Now, if you're going to live by those standards and you're in business, you better make the deal every time. And you better not have any financial problems. Or you better not have any relationship problems. Because the world loves somebody that wins all the time. You know what I started discovering on the other side of that? That isn't the case at all with God. God loves us more when we're having a tough time than when we're winning. See the difference? The third thing there is we only have one life to live and then we die. Man, I tell you, that's probably the biggest mistake any of us can make, believing that. Because I found out through some other people and studying this God's Word that He says, no, I gave you a soul that's going to live forever. Now you stop and think about that. Hey, if you're only playing this game until we die, well, do your own thing. Kind of makes sense. But now, if we're talking about living forever, the question becomes, where are we going to live forever? That's the question we've got to ask ourselves. And we find out that we're either going to, in this word, God's word, it tells us we're either going to live with him forever or separated from him forever. I tell you what, that is an eye-opener. That's something we need to strongly consider. And the question becomes, where are you and I going to live forever? The fourth thing I talk about there is the world says, well, if that's the case, do your own thing. I tell you what, I don't think you ever do your own thing. I had just won a big football game there in Washington, and we were getting ready to go play the Dallas Cowboys in about 1984 for the divisional championship. And man, I tell you what, that day I was strutting around that house. You know, I got up that morning. Yeah, you know, we do, guys, and we made the deal, and we won the football games, and we had a great sermon, you know. And God puts great, great women in our life, doesn't he? To know right when he knocked us down. And so I'm strutting around the house that morning, you know, getting ready to go to work, and Pat said, do you mind picking up your socks and your bathrobe? And I said, the nerve of her to tell such an important guy to do that. And so I kept around the house that day, and I keep going. I get ready to go to work, and then she started telling me something about the two boys, you know, this or that, and she'd had some problems with one of them, and then, you know, she was. And I said, "What is the deal here?" You know, I started getting agitated. What's she doing, worrying me with this? Something about my sons when I'm getting ready to go to work and try and win this big football game. And so I kind of stormed out of the house sometimes, like we do, you know, and slammed the door, you know, and got in the car, and I kind of made a little promise to myself I'd try and pray each day on the way to work. And all of a sudden in that prayer time it came to me, and I tell you what, when I got to work, here's what I did. I called Pat back and I said, "Pat, I want to tell you something. What you're taking care of at home is more important than what I'm taking care of at work. The most important thing I'm going to leave on this earth, you know what it is? It's not those football games. It's my two sons. And the influence that I've had on others." And man, I tell you, if there's anything that we need to have straight in our mind is that. That's the only thing we're going to leave here, really, that amounts to anything. And of course, being happy and successful, if you accomplish enough of these things, I found out this. Every time I accomplished some of those things, won games, went to Super Bowls, went to Rose Bowls, made some money and all that, I still had an emptiness inside me. And you know why? You know why I had that emptiness? I started discovering in 1972 that God had made me, and he had put that void there, and it didn't matter how much money I tried to put in there, how many football games I tried to win, I still had that empty feeling inside of me. Maybe some of you have had that. Because God made us. He made us with that empty feeling because he made us for a personal relationship with each one of us. That's the only thing that can feel that. And so you see, what had happened to me is sin, over that period of time, about 16 years, it kind of separated me from God. But you know, the great thing about that is God has a solution to that. You know what his solution to sin is? Is Jesus Christ and a personal relationship with him. And you know, the other thing I started to find out after putting those two worlds, the world's view and God's view together, I started understanding that God did not want me to have just a life and just have some fun, that he wanted me to have an abundant life. Not just a life, he wanted me to be the best football coach. He wanted you to be the best businessman and the best pastor and the best mechanic. He wanted us to be great. And I tell you, John 10:10 tells us, "I'm come that they might have life and that they may have it more abundantly." I started discovering that this game plan, the world's game plan, hey, I wasn't having an abundant life. I needed to start following God's game plan. So in 1972, one night in church, I got up and I went forward, and here's what I said. "God, I've known you were there ever since I was 9 years old, but I've not been living for you, and tonight I want to rededicate my life and commit my life to you." And I want to tell you, thinking back to those three guys in my life that just passed away, I'm sure there were things they looked at and wished that they could change about their life. I wished I could change those 16 years, because you see, I've wasted those. That rededication that night started a new life for me. I kind of took off in a different direction. Now, I want to share with you three little instances about my life here since I've rededicated my life and have put myself back in a right relationship with the Lord. The first one starts about our careers. Man, careers are important to guys and gals, and we all want to be successful in our fields. And like I told you, I had wanted to be a head coach. Man, I made up my mind. That's what I wanted, man. And sometimes I wanted that more than the other things, more than God, more than my family. Man, I had that thing up here, and I was going after it. Well, I went down to Tampa Bay, like I said, and I went down there to be the offensive coordinator, and I just knew that was going to be the next step for me to being a head coach. Well, I went down there, and that season that I was just telling you about, man, that thing started off pretty good, and all of a sudden, it went to pieces. And we wound up 4-12 that year. And when I finished that season, I could hold my hand out literally and shake like a leaf. I mean, that thing just fell apart. And the whole time, I'm going, why? Why, Lord? Why are you doing it? See, every program I'd ever been in, I'd been successful. All of a sudden, now I'm losing, and I'm saying, why? Why did this happen to me? Maybe some of you have had experiences like that in your career. Well, Don Coryell, that other coach that I had just got the job with the Chargers. And I prayed a prayer. I said, God, don't have him call me unless you want me to go. The next day, Don Coryell called me, and he offered me a job. The only problem was this job was not being the offensive coordinator. I was going to have to back up in my career. I was going to go back to just being a backfield coach and work under another assistant coach. Man, that pride and stuff, that bothered me. But I took the job, prayed about it and everything, and took the job. But you know, I had no peace about that decision. And so I made up my mind I was going to go see that little spiritual father of mine back in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And I got on a plane, and there weren't even any players there to work out that year, but I was going anyway. We took off, and that plane got, if you've ever been to Fayetteville, Arkansas, you got to kind of dive over the mountains. Any of you ever been there? And this little plane started over the mountains, but it was snowing that day, and we had to divert the landing. And we went back and landed in another little town south of there called Fort Smith. And man, again, I'm going, why, God? Why are you doing this to me? And questioning God all the time. And so I got back to Fort Smith, and I said, I'm still going to Fayetteville. I grabbed my bags, and I went out front, and there was just two little guys out there renting a car, and I heard them say they're going to drive to Fayetteville, Arkansas. I went over, and I said, are you guys going to Fayetteville? And they said, yeah. And I said, I'm going with you. I opened the back door and just threw my bags in there. These two guys are looking at each other, and we get in the car. They start down the road, and these guys must have been from Louisiana or Georgia someplace, because they are all over the place. This snow is starting to accumulate, and I can tell these guys aren't making it. And we get about 2 miles down the road on this freeway, and I said, hey, pull over and let me out. And I think they were glad to. They pulled over. I got out on that freeway, took my bags, and I went across and climbed across the center divider in the freeway. I went on the other side, and I hitchhiked my way back to Fort Smith. I went in there, and I got my flight. I knew I wasn't going to be able to go to Fayetteville. And again, I'm just really down, questioning God all the time. And I went over and sat down in the airport in Fort Smith. And I sitting there kind of praying, and I looked over, and there was a Bible sitting in the airport there. How many of you have ever seen a Bible in the airport? Not many. And I picked this Bible up, and I turned it to the first chapter of James, because that's the chapter I kind of claimed on making decisions and this career and everything. And so, without me saying a word, a young guy about my age tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, I claimed that verse and those verses right there in that chapter in my life about 6 months ago. And I said, really? Without me saying anything else, this guy rattled off a story that paralleled mine almost exactly. He had had a job, one he always wanted, lost it, and was trying to get it back, and God had given it back. Now, the world would tell us, well, that's just a coincidence. That Bible just happened to be there. This guy just happened to tap me on the shoulder. Are you kidding? That's like the two amoeba in a puddle of water. I mean, that's not an accident. Man, I look at it this way. God either put that guy there or that was an angel. That's the way I look at it. I got up, wrote his name down in my Bible, and I ran and jumped on that plane. And here's what I said. I said, God, I've been wanting to be a football coach all this time and a head football coach. But I'm going to leave that up to you from now on. You've convinced me. I'm putting my career in your hands. I went to San Diego. 2 weeks after I was there, the guys who had the job that I was going to be working under got another head coaching job. Don Coryell called me in the next day, and he said, Joe, I want you to be the offensive coordinator. And 2 years later, I was the head coach of the Washington Redskins. Now, I'm just sharing from my heart the way God has guided my life and my vocation. And maybe that fits for some of you. The second thing I want to kind of share with you In 1980, I came home one night. I was assistant coach with the Chargers, and my wife was at the house, and I got a wife, man, that there's not many like her, I think. God knew what he was doing when he gave her to me. I got there that night, and Pat, I could tell, had been crying. I came in, and it was during football season. We had 2 weeks left, and I started prying out of her. What's the problem? What's the problem? And she didn't want to tell me. Eventually, I got it out. She had gone to the doctors, and she had lost a hearing in one ear, and they had found an acoustic neuroma, a brain tumor, and she was going to have surgery at the first of the year. We finished the season there, and 2 weeks later, I took my wife in for surgery. That brain tumor, where that was located, is very close to all the facial nerves. My wife had one of the prettiest faces in the world. Perfectly round, beautiful lips, big eyes. Somebody I love so much and fell in love with. And when we came out of that surgery, and she came out of that surgery, she had partial paralysis on one side of her face. I tell you, that was something that me and my boys, I tell you what, probably nothing's touched us like that. But you know, the great comfort that I got from that was the fact of knowing that God loved her and that she belonged to Him. And the promise that we have in His Word is that all things work together for good to them that love God. Man, what a comfort that was. Maybe some of you have had loved ones that have suffered things like that, or maybe you yourself have suffered some things like that. I just cling to that. That's probably the only thing right now in my life that I can't wait to get to God and ask Him why. But I'm sure there's a reason, because I know she belongs to Him and she loves Him. And I tell you what, isn't it great to have that kind of comfort of knowing when things don't go well in your life? The third thing I want to share with you, I have a problem with finances, I think. I'm here to share that with everybody. Because, you know, I don't gamble, but it seems like I want to gamble on big things. I got my job with the Washington Redskins, and here I have a 3-year contract. And man, I said, well, you know, I could get fired here. So, you know, I wasn't going to put my faith in God. I was going to put my faith, I'm going to make some money. And so I jumped out and made a financial investment over the top of my wife's best opinion. Boy, I tell you, she's a lot smarter than I am. I figured that out. But anyway, I found a way to make her say yes. You know, guys, do we sometimes do that? Or sometimes the ladies make her husband find a way to say yes. And so I got this investment in Oklahoma, and it was a land deal, and I got in a partnership, and this thing's rolling along, and hey, I was going to be a passive investor, and I was going to make all this money. Instead of just trusting God and coaching football, I was going to get rich in real estate. And, you know, I don't think I'm an egotist about football, because I'm always knowing somebody's around the corner ready to knock our block off. But in business world, I think I was kind of somebody that thought he kind of had this thing all worked out. Got in this investment. It goes about 2 years, and all of a sudden I started getting late notices 1 year right before the football season started on some payments. I went, well, hey, what's going on here, you know? And so I sent a friend of mine, a guy by the name of Don Meredith, who's very close to me. He's here tonight. I sent him down there, not the football, Don Meredith. We got together on some Christian youth homes and things like that we'd worked on, and he had a background in business. I said, Don, go down there and see if you can figure out what the deal is. He went down there and spent 64 days in Oklahoma trying to work on this problem and kind of, I think, hiding some of it from me. Well, I just coached the season. I said, hey, I can't worry about this. I'm going to coach the season. After the season's over with, I beat it down to Oklahoma. And when I sat down the first time with the attorneys, there were 9 banks involved, and it was way over $1 million in debt. And the interest alone was like $30,000 a month. I was bankrupt. Now, I can remember the night that I figured all that out, and I got on my knees right next to a bed in a motel room in Norman, Oklahoma, and I said, God, I said, I am bankrupt. There's no question about it. But I said, and I'm willing to go through this if this is what you want me to do, but, you know, I don't feel like I should file for bankruptcy. I feel like I have an obligation to these banks and to these people, and I'd like to work this out. And I'm just praying to you and saying, this is the biggest mess in the world. Only you could straighten this out. And do you know, I went to all 9 of those banks. They all worked out something with me. And do you know what's a bigger miracle than that? Not a one of them let out one peep to to the press or anything else. All it would have taken is somebody working in any of those banks to said one thing, and hey, Joe Gibbs, the coach of the Washington Redskins, that would have been all over USA Today. They'd have had a ball with that, wouldn't he? Man, I tell you, it was miraculous. And do you know that I learned so many things about myself and my wife? Man, I tell you, Pat stood up for me during that process, and my kids. I'd ordered one of them a car. Can you imagine what that's like getting a car, a brand new car? I have my son go and tell my wife, so listen, you tell Dad I don't need that car. I learned some things I never would have learned about my wife, my family, myself during that financial crisis. Now, the point is this. The world will tell you you got to win in all those things. But I'm here to tell you, God will be as real and work in those down times and adversity, and He'll mold you and make you and work through those processes. Hey, we don't want to miss those things. Can I tell you this? That is one of the most cherished times in my life. Now, I didn't like it when I was going through it. But I'm going to tell you, I learned so many things. Man, I wrote down 15 things I learned from that experience. See what I'm saying? The world says, hey, you got to win in everything. And yet, we all know you're not going to win in everything. There's going to be tough relationships. And there's going to be things that happen to you. And in the business world and in your personal life. And isn't it great to know, hey, no matter what I do, it seems like, and how bad I can mess it up, God will love me through all of it. And I'll wind up getting stronger and stronger and stronger as He molds me and makes me. I kind of would like to close now by just sharing a few other little things here about hopefully some things that you got from me sharing my testimony tonight. Maybe there's some of you out there that when I stood at those guys' foot of their bed and kind of questioned some things about my life, maybe some of you have wasted some of the years in your life. And the key becomes this: what are we going to do with the rest of our life? Where are we going to store up our treasures from here on? We need to store up our treasures in heaven. Investing it in other people. Okay? And our loved ones and our children. So maybe some of you have had some of those feelings that I had. And have been second-guessing about some things in your life. Maybe you're battling adversity in some way. Maybe you could be having a problem with your finances. You could be having a problem in some way physically. Or maybe you could be battling some kind of an addiction. And maybe you need help through some of those things. So that's my hope. By me sharing some of those personal things with you and kind of sharing what's been going on in my life, you either have to look at that and say, hey, Joe's kidding me. He's not telling me the truth. Or if God can do that for him, meaning me, this isn't a lot to work with. Think what He can do for you.
Joe Gibbs will return in a few moments with a prayer and some personal closing remarks that many will find helpful. It could very well be someone you know that would appreciate hearing Joe's story. Life story tapes are passed around many offices, neighborhoods, and among family members. So if you've enjoyed this tape, please pass it on. Now, here's Joe Gibbs.
I want to close now with just a simple prayer. And if you pray this prayer, just to yourself, wherever you are, and you mean it, and you ask Him to come into your life, and He's promised that He'll do that. I want to close now with that little prayer, if we just all bow our heads. Father, I want to thank You for each person here tonight. Father, we realize that there's no mistakes, there's no accidents in life. You meant for each one of them to be here tonight. And I pray that if anybody here wants to make a commitment to You, I pray that you'll pray this simple prayer after me. Father, I know that I'm a sinner. I know that You sent Your Son, Jesus Christ, to die for me. I know that He arose and is sitting at Your right hand now, and I want to have a personal relationship with You. And I ask You to forgive me of my sins and to come into my life and live with me forever. And I thank You for the promise that You've made and that You're going to do that. And I believe it in Your Son's name. Amen. I hoped you enjoyed my life story. If you prayed that prayer with me, I would like to take a few minutes to share with you how you can continue on your spiritual journey. I would encourage you to begin reading God's Word daily, beginning with the Gospel of John. If you don't already have one, you can receive your complimentary copy of the New Testament in modern English by writing or calling Life Story. The information is printed on the tape jacket. Second, I would suggest you find a Bible teaching church and attend there on a regular basis. Third, pray and be open and honest with God. He knows what you're going through. And finally, take the initiative to tell others about your decision to follow Christ. Maybe you've listened and you're not ready to make a commitment. I challenge you to read the New Testament portion of the Bible, and I encourage you to talk to someone about the questions you have regarding Jesus Christ. The things I've talked about today are important. I want you to know God really cares for you and me and our spiritual walk. God bless you on your spiritual journey.
According to Kingdom's free access policy, you may copy this recording. For quantity discounts or other life stories, call us toll-free at 1-800-661-1141. That's 1-800-661-1141.